All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melanheads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is May 7th, 2026, and we are learning just how artificial that move yesterday was, that we saw that big move yesterday morning on the announcement of war ending for the fifth time in 19 days. Well, we're learning in hindsight just how rigged those markets really were yesterday. First, the easy one, the Japanese intervened in the yen market for the second time, the second yen intervention, if you will. They did so earlier this week. It was another $30 billion. The Japanese are rigging their currency stronger here. They're taking the USD-JPY chart lower. That contributed to the big move lower in the Dixie yesterday, the weakening dollar that was driven by the Japanese, either the BOJ or the finance ministry, dumping dollars in the open market in order to prop up the value of their currency. All right, so we had that going on, but the bigger story is what happened in oil yesterday. First of all, oil's down about $5, trading around $90 a barrel for WTI crude this morning. We learned yesterday, all right, around 7 a.m., or I'm sorry, just minutes before the announcement, we had a $920 million oil short was taken out within an hour before the announcement of the memorandum of understanding that was being sent to the Iranians and peace in our time and all that good stuff. Somebody bet almost $1 billion that oil was going to go down right before that happened. And then, of course, the memorandum comes out, oil plunges dramatically. And then the same trader covered that short at 7 a.m., just minutes before the Iranians posted a website talking about how the toll booth at the Strait of Hormuz and you have to pay in the Iranian rial and basically all these things that suggested, no, the war isn't coming to an abrupt end. So somebody with very deep pockets made a lot of money trading oil futures around these geopolitical headlines yesterday. It's not the first time we've seen this happen. This has been happening pretty much every time we have some major geopolitical announcement. And now we've got an announcement today from the DOJ that they are probing those suspicious trades. So is this a case of, are we going to investigate ourselves and find no wrongdoing? Or are they actually serious about what's going on here? I have a theory. All right, you ready for this? This is my tinfoil hat theory. I have a theory. The United States government is rigging the oil market on purpose. They're jawboning oil prices lower on purpose. Why? Because this is a war of economic attrition. The current stalemate, if you will, in the Strait of Hormuz, there are two opposing sides. On one side, you've got the Iranians trying to inflict as much economic harm on the West as possible by driving oil prices higher. And so it makes perfect tactical military sense for the U.S. Treasury or somebody with deep pockets, people connected to the president, whoever, to drive oil prices lower to minimize that damage. At the same time, the Iranians are running out of oil storage space. They need to inflict so much harm on the West that they capitulate and they lift their blockade to let that Iranian oil out so that they can get the dollars that they need to buy food and pretty much everything else. That is the calculus in the Strait of Hormuz right now. It's this war of attrition. And so everything going on, the rigging of oil markets, it makes sense from a military perspective if that's really your goal. And of course, the Iranians' goal is to get those oil prices higher. So the Iranians are like, WTF are you talking about, America? We didn't agree to any memorandum. You still got to pay the toll booth. This is the war of words that is moving markets. And the market is falling for it. I hate to say it, but the market just completely bought this line, hook, line, and sinker yesterday. Now, as that's going on, we're also learning some more details about the abrupt U-turn on Project Freedom, that plan that President Trump announced over the weekend to escort or not escort ships through the Strait of Hormuz to try to get them out of the Gulf. Apparently, the Saudis were pissed about that. And the Saudis didn't hear about it until President Trump posted it on Truth Social. And they closed their airspace and said, you're not allowed to use our airfields for launching your warplanes that are going to escort those ships. And it looks like that was the reason for the abrupt U-turn on Project Freedom, not some request from the Pakistanis or we're all going to have some kind of kumbaya moment. As that's going on, we've got satellite images this morning showing an oil spill off Karg Island in Iran. Karg Island, remember, That is that all-important piece of real estate where 90% of Iran's oil is exported from. It's got a big freaking bullseye on it right now. President Trump has been hesitant to target that island because it'll drive oil prices higher if he hits it. Of course, it will destroy Iran's economy entirely in one fell swoop if he decides to hit it. Now, there was articles last week about how the Iranians are turning to these old dilapidated tankers for storage to try to avoid having to shut in their wells. Shutting down oil wells is not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to bring them right back online. So the Iranians are putting that oil anywhere they can in order to keep those wells operating, including taking these rickety old tankers and filling them up. Well, now we've got an oil spill off Karg Island. So did one of these old tankers spring a leak? Did somebody have an accident? Or is the pressure building up in the pipelines? Did we blow something up? I don't know, but you can see it from space. As that's going on, Japan and the UAE are holding talks on expanded oil supply and joint stockpiles. And I suspect what's going on here, remember the UAE left OPEC last week. That was a huge development when that happened. The UAE plans to pump more oil. In Japan right now, they are over a barrel. They're one of the least energy secure major economies in the world, completely dependent on imports from the Middle East and to a lesser extent, the U.S. And so the Japanese are saying, oh, hey, UAE, you're not in the OPEC club anymore, which means you're going to pump a lot more oil. How's about we buy it all off of you because we don't want to be back in this situation ever again. So let's talk about a big reservoir somewhere that we're going to fill up with all this oil that you're going to be pumping, much to the chagrin of your former buddies in OPEC. The Japanese are doing, I think they're just out in front of what everybody else is going to do. I think all of these energy insecure countries are going to realize they better do something to stockpile oil because this could happen again at any moment. It doesn't look like there's going to be any clear resolution to this conflict. So Japan, probably the first of many who will be buying up as much oil as possible just as soon as the strait reopens. China has asked their banks to pause making loans to U.S. sanctioned refiners, or that is Chinese refiners that have been sanctioned by the U.S. for refining Iranian oil. Now, this is just a few days after China said out of the other side of their mouth, hey, U.S. or Chinese refineries, you don't have to obey those U.S. sanctions. Don't worry, U.S., China, big A, number one dragon. And now they're like, yeah, don't make any loans to these guys because we don't want the U.S. Treasury to sanction our banks. So, yeah, China's trying to walk the tightrope, talking out of both sides of their mouths on that issue. We've got Maersk is saying $500 million a month is the expected cost from the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. But good news, they're able to pass those costs onto their customers. And then, of course, their customers will pass their costs onto their customers, and that's you. In other words, what's going on in the Strait is going to cause inflation. No shocker there. It's just unusual to see them admitting that out in the open. Whirlpool is getting absolutely destroyed this morning after earnings. They posted a big loss. They lowered their guidance and they cut their dividends. That stock is down high double digits this morning. What the heck is going on with Whirlpool? Well, it's hard to sell appliances when the housing market has been frozen in place for years. And they're trying to say, oh, it's the Iran war and the disruption of the Strait of Hormuz. No, that's not what's going on with Whirlpool. Nobody's buying houses. Nobody's moving. And so nobody's having their appliances replaced. And also Whirlpool's kind of crap. Also, they just don't make them like they used to. Also going on this morning, XAI is apparently a neocloud now. That story broke yesterday that XAI will be renting an entire data center, their Colossus data center, to Anthropic. Anthropic's going to rent the entire thing. So let me ask you this. If the demand is so insane for these GPUs, oh, we just don't have enough compute. We're so compute constrained. All those stupid headlines of the last 3-4 years, rinse, repeat. How come XAI has just a whole data center laying around that's available to rent to Anthropic? Doesn't XAI have their own model, Grok? And aren't they compute constrained? Aren't they buying as much compute as possible because Grok is going to achieve artificial general intelligence or whatever this crap? And now all of a sudden an entire data center, like, we don't need it. We'll just rent it to Anthropic. Loss-making Anthropic, by the way, who along with OpenAI are these two are single-handedly inflating this entire bubble, these loss-making companies. Yeah, so that's going on. Apparently, XAI is a neocloud now. And even as that's going on, we've got Blackstone and KKR are in talks with Google to push their AI models out to their portfolio companies. Now, Blackstone and KKR, some of these alternative asset managers, all of whom have pumped buku bucks into building out these data centers and financing data centers. And now apparently XAI has like an entire data center just sitting around they don't need. So they're like, what are we going to do? We better gin up some additional demand for these data centers. I know we'll force our portfolio companies to use these products, whether they want to or not. Looks like that's what's going on. But again, oh, the demand is insane and yeah, all that stuff. This bubble is on borrowed time, guys. You can see it happening, even though the stocks just keep marching onward and upward as the market melts up. Got GameStop and eBay. That would-be merger took kind of a hilarious turn this morning. We'll talk about that one. What else we have? The European Union has failed to finalize the trade deal with the United States. That is last year's trade deal, the one that they cut after last year's tariffs that were then struck down by the Supreme Court before they came back under a different statute. Well, we made this deal. We negotiated this deal. We had all this big, beautiful deal ceremony and everything. And well, then the EU didn't sign it. Oh, President Trump's threatening to put tariffs back on European auto manufacturers and other industries because of that. Oh, so the 2025 trade war stuff, that's going to be making a comeback here, it looks like. And last but not least, the SEC has a proposal out to end mandatory quarterly filing requirements for publicly traded companies. Yeah, we're going to have to weigh in on that one. Not such a good idea. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button for the algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the Melonheads because we do this every single day. And the S&P right now is higher by 10 points or 0.15% in the green. The Dow is up by 136 points or about 0.28% higher. And the NASDAQ is higher by 40 points or 0.14% in lieu of absolute catastrophe number go up. The dollar is weaker again this morning, 97.84. That's off by 19 basis points, a combination of yentervention and lower oil prices. Let's talk about yenterventions here. Japan likely used $30 billion in follow-up yen intervention. Japanese authorities likely used another $30 billion intervening in the currency market just days after an earlier round of action, according to Bloomberg analysis of central bank accounts, in the latest indication of their resolve to support the yen. The size of the entry into the market was probably around 4.6 trillion yen, based on a comparison of Bank of Japan accounts released Thursday and money broker forecasts. Thursday was the first business day after the Golden Week holidays through Wednesday. I think that's basically it. They did, I think it was a $34 billion intervention earlier this week. Now another 30. And you can kind of see that this was the big one earlier this week. That was like the 34 or 39 billion. I forget what the actual number was. And then here we go. Yesterday was the second smaller intervention in yen markets. But part of that big move that we saw in the dollar yesterday was the Japanese government intervening in the free trading of currencies in order to artificially strengthen their currency. This is USD JPY, what we're looking at here. So this chart heading lower, that is the Japanese currency strengthening versus the dollar. Looking over at the bond market, we got yields are lower again this morning. The 30-year yield 4.923, that's lower by 2 basis points. The 10-year yield's 4.318, off by almost 4 points. The two-year yield's off by 4 points and change to 3.830%. And the 1 month is down by a point and change at 3.634. Looking over at the bond market, Bitcoin market. Bitcoin's lower by about 500 bucks here, still above 80,000, $80,862. Apparently, we ruffled some Bitcoiner feathers yesterday. And with that talk about Stretch, look, guys, I like Bitcoin. I own Bitcoin. I make regular purchases of Bitcoin. That being said, Michael Saylor, that guy is jacked up on coke, and he's marketing this STRC, this Stretch product, to economic illiterates, and I got to call it like I see it. And so it makes no sense whatsoever to buy Stretch. Any bull case for buying Stretch, you might as well just buy Bitcoin instead, because if Bitcoin stops going up, Stretch dies. And so I got to call it like I see it. And if that means I'm no longer waving the pom-poms for Team Bitcoin at that particular moment, then so be it. I'm not a freaking cheerleader, guys. I'm going to call it like I see it every time. Sorry. Meanwhile, over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold is higher by 1.25%, $47.49 for spot gold. Spot silver back above $80, $81.57, higher by $4.23, 5.5% higher. I like the shiny. What the heck is going on in metals markets today? Look, guys, metals really likes these lower energy prices for some reason. It makes me a little nervous to see it trading like a risk asset. I've been talking about that for a while here. But, hey, if metals want to go higher, I own a lot of metals. I'm not arguing with it. I just like to see it going up for the right reason. Copper, meanwhile, is higher by 0.9%. Platinum is higher by 2.4%. And palladium is higher by about 0.15%. Metals are up across the board this morning. Crude oil sharply lower again, $90.15 for June WTI futures, off by almost $5 or 5% and change. Take a look at the oil chart here. You can see second big day lower in a row. Is somebody juking markets lower here? Is this the Treasury Department trading oil again, or is this something else? I don't know, but you'll notice we are well below our 50-day moving average here. Now, let's talk about some of these developments in oil. Kobayashi Letter has a pretty good play-by-play from yesterday. According to their analysis, $920 million worth of crude oil shorts were taken out 70 minutes before that Axios report, the anonymously sourced report, claimed that the U.S. and Iran were near a 14-point deal to end the war. At 3:40 EM Eastern Time yesterday, nearly 10,000 contracts worth of crude oil shorts were taken out without any major news. That's the equivalent to $920 million in notional value. All right, that's notional value. That's the value of the oil itself. I don't think that's the value of the contracts. Don't quote me on that. An unusually large trade for 3:40 a.m. Eastern Time. At 4:50 a.m. Eastern Time, just 70 minutes later, Axios reports that the U.S. is close to a memorandum of understanding to end the Iran war. And, of course, oil prices plummet. By 7 a.m. Eastern Time, oil had fallen over 12%, with these crude oil shorts gaining approximately $125 million. But minutes later, Iran launched the Persian Gulf Strait Authority and oil prices surged 8%. So somebody knew to short oil at 3:40 a.m. right before that announcement. Then they knew to cover at 7 a.m. right before the Strait Authority was announced by Iran. And look, guys, we've seen something similar. We've seen these suspicious trades around these major geopolitical events within hours or minutes. And it seems the DOJ sees it too, because this one from Walter Bloomberg just moments ago, the Department of Justice is investigating more than $2.6 billion in oil trades placed shortly before major Iran war announcements by President Donald Trump. According to reports, traders made massive bets that oil prices would fall just before ceasefires, military delays, and Strait of Hormuz updates were announced. The DOJ and the CFTC are reviewing at least four trades, though authorities say there's no proof yet of insider trading or who placed the bets. I wonder if it's the Chicago CFTC office, the one that laid off all of their attorneys, their securities attorneys, and then like the last two guys quit, so they didn't have a single securities attorney in the entire freaking office. Is that the CFTC that's investigating this one? Okay. Hey, at least they're looking. I'm sure they're going to investigate themselves and find no wrongdoing. But again, guys, from a military standpoint, it makes sense. It's not free market economics. The libertarian in me cringes at the thought of it. But from a military standpoint, it makes sense that they would try to rig oil prices lower. Meanwhile, we've got some clarification on the abrupt U-turn in the Strait of Hormuz. Trump's abrupt U-turn on a plan to reopen the Strait came after backlash from allies. Saudi Arabia, a key Gulf ally, suspended the U.S. military's ability to use its bases and airspace to carry out the operation. So apparently, Prince Mohammed bin Salman was a little upset about, Project Freedom, about bringing ships through the Strait of Hormuz, and they threw a fit that they weren't consulted, that they found out through True Social, and they said, you're not allowed to use our air bases and our airspace for these operations. And without Saudi airspace, well, what else are we going to do? So all of a sudden that canceling Project Freedom as soon as they announced it had more to do with the Saudis throwing a fit than any peace deal with the Iranians. Meanwhile, shout out to Jack Prandelli, who posted this one this morning. Satellites have detected massive oil spill spreading across a vast area of the Persian Gulf around Karg Island. Synthetic aperture radar imagery shows a large surface slick emanating from the waters around Karg Island. That's Iran's primary crude oil export terminal, responsible for 90% of the country's exports. At time of detection, multiple tankers will simultaneously loading at the Karg Island terminal. It's not yet clear whether the spill originated from a loading operation, a vessel, subsea infrastructure, or the terminal itself. So you can see the slick here, guys. And again, we had that story. It was earlier this week or late last week about how Iran was turning to these old rickety vessels to store the oil. So highly possible one of them sprung a leak or just a sabotage. Did we bomb something? Was this an accident at the loading dock? We don't know, but there's a lot of oil in the water. And that just goes to show you there's severe ecological risk associated with this conflict as well. Meanwhile, Japan and the UAE agree to hold talks on expanded oil supply and joint stockpiles. The headline says it all here, guys. The UAE is about to pump a whole bunch more oil, and Japan is ready to buy it up. And these joint stockpiles, again, here in the United States, we have our deep geological storage, right? We store it in salt caverns. Underground oil storage requires perfect geology. That's not exactly something Japan has a lot of. Japan and geology don't always get along so well. And so they're talking about joint stockpiles. Maybe the Emirates are going to store oil for the Japanese, or the Japanese are just going to buy up that extra production that they're producing now that they're no longer members of OPEC. But a lot of geopolitical pieces moving with the UAE right at the center of it. And today is no exception. Meanwhile, China asked banks to pause new loans to U.S. sanctioned refiner. This is like just a few days after China said, you don't have to listen to those U.S. sanctions. Screw America. And then they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, don't make any loans to these guys. China's financial regulator advised the country's largest banks to temporarily suspend new loans to five refiners recently sanctioned by the U.S. over their ties to Iranian oil, according to people familiar with the matter. The National Financial Regulatory Administration asked banks to review their exposure and business dealings with firms, including Hengli Petrochemical, one of China's largest private refiners, while awaiting further guidance, the people said, asking not to be named. For now, banks have been guided not to extend new yuan-denominated credit, though they have also been told not to call in existing loans. The verbal directive, which came before China entered a long holiday weekend on May 1st, contrasts with a May 2nd notice from China's Ministry of Commerce, which instructed companies to disregard U.S. sanctions. That was the first time China had deployed a blocking measure introduced in 2021 aimed at protecting its firms from foreign laws it deemed unjustified. The move highlights the balancing act Beijing faces as it tries to project defiance towards the Trump administration while shielding its largest state-owned banks from U.S. secondary sanctions. Tensions are escalating between the superpowers just weeks before a long-awaited meeting between President Trump and his counterpart Xi Jinping on May 14th and 15th. And well, hold on to your butts, guys. May 14th and 15th, when President Trump and Xi Jinping get together. Well, what's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. Meanwhile, Maersk CEO sees passing higher oil shock costs to customers. Good news, that customer is you, which means life's going to get more expensive. The chief executive officer of A.P. Moller Maersk said the oil shock caused by the Iran war will significantly raise costs this quarter and next, which the world's number two container carrier will seek to fully pass on to customers. The conflict has risen expenses by about $500 million a month. Oh, so only $6 billion a year, Maersk CEO Vincent Clerc said in an interview with Bloomberg. So far, we are able to maintain our guidance because our experience is that we're able to pass those costs on to our customers. We're positive that we can maintain this in the quarters to come. Maersk's costs go up. That means their customers' costs go up, and that means their customer costs go up. And at the end of this daisy chain is you. You will be paying higher costs. If it gets more expensive to ship stuff, then ultimately the sticker at the store is going to be going higher. More inflation on the horizon. No big surprise there. What is surprising is just how terrible Whirlpool's earnings were this morning. Whirlpool stock plunges on weak earnings and dividend cut. This one in Barron's. A combination of rising costs, aggressive competition, and an uncooperative economy led to weaker than expected earnings, a dividend cut, and reduced financial guidance. Wednesday evening, Whirlpool reported first quarter per share loss of 56 cents from sales of $3.3 billion. Wall Street was looking for earnings of positive 38 cents on sales of 3.4 billion. Yikes, that is a big miss on the EPS for Whirlpool. A year ago, Whirlpool reported earnings per share of $1.70 from sales of 3.6 billion. By the way, where is it? Here it is. Whirlpool is caught in a vortex. You see what they did there? Yeah. Thank you very much, Barron's, for that one this morning. A year ago, Whirlpool reported earnings per share of $1.70 from sales of 3.6 billion. Lower industry sales, unfavorable price mix, and tariff confusion helped lead to the decline. I don't know that it's so much tariff confusion, guys. When I hear appliances aren't selling, this paragraph is what jumps out at me. The company was looking forward to a housing recovery this year, which has yet to materialize. That housing recovery I've been hearing about for years. It also announced a dividend suspension. Whirlpool was paying 90 cents per quarter. So they're not paying anything now. Guys, the housing market is frozen. Nobody's buying houses. Nobody's moving. If nobody's buying houses or moving, then nobody's buying appliances. The home builders are in big trouble too. All that translates to lousy earnings for Whirlpool. And look at that stock, down 21.3%. Getting absolutely killed this morning. $43.08 for Whirlpool. Off by more than 11 bucks on this news. All right, now we got to talk about my favorite topic, the AI bubble. This one in TechCrunch. Is XAI a neocloud now? Is Elon Musk going full CoreWeave? Is that what he's doing? Because on Wednesday, XAI and Anthropic announced a surprise partnership that has the cloud maker buying out all of the compute capacity at XAI's Colossus One data center, roughly 300 megawatts, that allowed Anthropic to immediately raise its usage limits. It's a huge deal for XAI, likely worth billions of dollars. More importantly, it immediately monetized one of the company's most impressive accomplishments, turning XAI from a consumer to a provider of compute. It's tempting to see the arrangement as a shot at OpenAI amid the ongoing lawsuit, but Musk's explanation on X was that XAI had already moved training to a new data center, Colossus 2, and XAI simply didn't need them both. Wait, didn't need them both. I thought demand was insane. I thought they're compute constrained. Now we got extra data centers just laying around. Anybody want to rent my data center? No longer slightly used. In the short term, there's an obvious logic at work. XAI's existing products are mostly focused on Grok, which has seen plummeting usage since the image generation debacles earlier this year. If XAI's data center buildout is much more than what Grok needs to operate, partnering with Anthropic adds a lot of green to the balance sheet. This is especially useful as the company, now combined with SpaceX, speeds towards an IPO. More broadly, having Anthropic lined up as a customer makes it easier to believe that SpaceX's orbital data center play might actually work. It won't. All right. Orbital data centers. Have you ever done something that was really hard and then thought to yourself, wow, that would be a lot easier in orbit? No, you haven't, because nothing is easier in orbit. Everything is infinitely harder in space. Data centers in space is a freaking stupid idea. That being said, besides all the science fiction malarkey, what are we talking about here? Plummeting usage for Grok, partnering with Anthropic adds a lot of green to the balance sheet. Okay, that's great. It's especially useful for the company now combined with SpaceX. Where was it? Here, XAI's data center buildout is much more than what Grok needs to operate. Well, for a second there, it sounded like Elon bought too many chips and built too many data centers, and now he's trying to figure out what there is to do with them. And how does that make sense? Because I'm hearing everywhere else that we don't have enough compute. The world is compute constrained. The demand is insane. We can't get enough compute. Well, maybe the reason why some people can't get enough compute is because other people are buying it for no other reason other than their peers, the other Silicon Valley billionaires, are buying it and they're afraid of missing out. In other words, this whole thing has just been one big FOMO rally. But beyond the short-term benefit, the Anthropic partnership sends an unusual message about where Elon Musk's priorities really lie. It suggests the company's real business may be more about building data centers than training AI models. Just build it, and then one day we'll figure out what to do with it. Trust me, bro. Now, as that's going on, Blackstone and KKR are in talks with Google to bring AI models to portfolio firms. This is kind of funny because businesses don't want to use these products anywhere outside of software development. I always have these software developer guys show up in my comments or like, I use it to write code. I get it, but there's a whole economy outside of writing code, and they're not interested in AI. And so when they're not interested, what do? Well, you get the private equity firms that financed all these data centers, jams it down their throats. Blackstone and KKR in talks with Google to bring AI models to portfolio firms, whether they want to or not. Blackstone and KKR are in talks with Alphabet to give the companies they own access to Google's AI models, according to people familiar with the matter. The talks come as OpenAI and Anthropic are each partnering with alternative asset managers to form AI consultancies that will turn private equity-backed firms into a new revenue source for AI companies. They're all doing this. Alphabet, OpenAI, Anthropic, they're all partnering with private equity firms to jam this crap down businesses' throats. In addition to Blackstone and KKR, Alphabet is also in discussions with private equity firm EQT, the people said, asking not to be identified. The discussions aren't exclusive, and there are no assurances they'll lead to a deal. Nobody wanted to comment. Some of the biggest private equity managers, such as Blackstone and KKR, have injected billions into data centers and other key aspects of the AI play. And the latest discussions stand to make the investment firms an even bigger presence in the boom. They also thrust some of AI's biggest champions deeper into a debate on the risks of throwing so much money at a nascent industry. A couple of years ago, private equity firms were waiting to see what was happening with AI and its impact, encouraging their portfolio companies to do trials around adoption, said Tanvir Kapadia, partner at Boston Consulting Group. Now they are getting more actively involved. In other words, now they're not asking. Now they're forcing these companies to use this crap because they sank too much money into data centers that apparently there's not so much demand for because XAI has a whole one just sitting there doing nothing that they can rent to Anthropic now. Meanwhile, let's talk about GameStop. I love this one this morning. This one from the Kobayashi letter. GameStop CEO Ryan Cohen announces he has been suspended from eBay just 2 days after proposing a $56 billion acquisition of the company. He must have been taking too long to ship his product. I don't know. eBay says that Cohen's account has been permanently suspended for putting the eBay community at risk. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is not good for the prospects for a GameStop eBay merger. Apparently this thing just went hostile because they kicked Ryan Cohen off the platform. EU fails to finalize US trade deal, risking new tariffs on cars. Oh, great. So 2025 headlines are about to make a comeback. You get a tariff, you get a tariff. The European Union failed to finalize a long delayed US trade deal during overnight talks, despite warnings from President Trump that he would soon impose fresh tariffs. This is last year's trade deal. They never finished it. They never signed on the dotted line, and they didn't do it last night. Negotiators from the European Parliament and EU countries met Wednesday to discuss potential amendments to the deal, which was initially struck in July, but they didn't make any conclusive decisions, according to Cyprus, which holds the EU's rotating presidency. Talks will continue, but President Trump has said if they don't sign this deal, there will be new tariffs, and, well, that is looking increasingly likely. And last but not least, we got to talk about this one. SEC advances Trump-backed proposal to end mandatory quarterly earnings reports. They're talking about going from quarterly to semi-annually. Look, what they're saying here is that quarterly reports, they put too much cost on companies, that it's burdensome and compliance is a burden. Boo-hoo, you're a publicly traded company. This is what you have to do in order to be transparent and give your investors all the information about what's really happening at your company. This is the price of going public. Doing this semi-annual will only make things worse. All right, sure, you're going to save on compliance costs, but we just got done yesterday talking about freaking Supermicrocomputer, who's been involved in accounting scandal after accounting scandal, and then they hired BS auditor BDO, who was chosen because of their lax standards to sign off on their books, and then they get caught smuggling chips into China, the most obvious crime in the world that everybody could see was happening for years, and yet everybody just denied it. Why? Because number go up. Maybe, just maybe, this isn't the time to be more lax with our reporting standards. When companies like Mycium, which has a clear history of pump and dump, suddenly puts the words AI in their name and their stock rallies 150% in a day. Allbirds does the same thing. Their stock rallies 700%. Just maybe this isn't a good time to be easing the reporting requirements, especially because when you violate those reporting requirements, nothing happens to you. The SEC is a completely toothless organization. Our financial regulators are either complicit or completely inept. One or the other going on here. It doesn't really matter which it is. This is not the time. Just don't make it easier for the crooks. The crooks are already running rampant all over Wall Street. Why would we be making it easier for them? This is a terrible, terrible idea. Anyways, guys, I just want to say thank you for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget the like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow. We do this every business day. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links are down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.